Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Are you paying attention to what's going on in the world today? If you are you preparing for a brave new world? Because things are changing. What is stopping us from changing with the world? I don't think a lot of companies are prepared. The world is changing faster than ever before, and it's happening right in front of our eyes, and we just look at it and go, as Tim Allen says. My first guest is a gentleman named Joe Jackman. He is founder and CEO of Jackman, and his company is a reinvention consultancy. Now, what does that mean? Well, he wrote a book called The Reinventionist Mindset, and he feels that we, as business people, need to, of course, stay very alert and watch as the world changes and then react to it. Now, the question is, do you need a reinvention team to help you? If you do, Joe, I think, may just have that for you. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thanks so much, Alan. It's a treat to be with you today.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, when I say, you know, the world is changing faster than ever and companies may not be prepared and most likely aren't. And what is stopping these companies from changing? Because a lot of people are, a lot of organizations and companies are going out of business because they can't pivot if they need to. They can't change. Is it pride? Is it that they are just cemented into their shoes and can't move, afraid to move? What do you think it is?
Well, yeah, I think the short answer, Alan, is human nature, really. And by that, I mean that particularly companies that have been around for a while and have been successful. You know, go to the sports analogy. You know, we play differently when we're trying to win a game against an opponent that has a lead. But when you have that lead yourself, you tend to play differently defensively. You play to protect that lead. And I think a lot of successful companies kind of buy their own hype. They get to believe, and I've worked with lots of them, some of them, you know, over 100 years old, and they get to believe that their way is the right way, and they are who they are, they're big enough, and they've been successful. And they start to say, well, look, there might be new ways, and let those other people, you know, do different versions of things, but we've got it figured out. That's one aspect of human nature. The second is fear. And you know, sometimes it's very personal. It's leaders saying, I don't want to be, you know, the person that takes a leap, makes a change, and it doesn't work, and it fails. And, you know, how good would that be? And when I counsel leadership teams, you know, I'm sometimes working with companies that really do have to change. There's a case there that they know. And I say, look, would you rather be the one that tried some things, not all of which worked, but at least you moved the company forward and you figured it out? Or would you like to be the one that stayed put and it didn't work and that's on your watch? And unfortunately, that's more the norm today. You know, business leaders, what do we like? Reliability, predictability. When change comes, it's the opposite of that. And so, I, you know, one of the principles in the book that you mentioned is embrace uncertainty. You know, don't just learn to love, you know, be comfortable with change. Let's learn to love it. Let's learn to be good at it, like pro athlete good at it. That's what today calls for.
I agree. I think the best example of that is the movie Apollo 13, where they're astronauts, great. You know, and it's like they're up there and they only have so much time. And, you know, they had to really learn how to think out of the box and try anything. Mm-hmm. I just love that whole movie. And I tend to live my life like that. Like, I mentioned a post that I made. I'm going to say the last couple of years have been the best years of my life. And 2020 may be actually one of the key most best years of my life because it has taught me some important lessons that maybe I didn't want to learn before. We're going to talk more about this. Joe Jackman joining us. JackmanReinvents.com on the web. Joe is widely considered to be the leading expert on rapid reinvention. So, you know, I guess if you're going to reinvent yourself, the faster the better. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages.
Well, you're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. I'm Alan Taylor. Don't forget, go to our website, entrepreneur.com. You can find this show and others, lots of great podcasts, stories, blogs, and all kinds of great information at entrepreneur.com. I'm here every week talking with, interesting people in the business world to help entrepreneurs on their journey through life and business. Joe Jackman joining us, jackmanreinvents.com on the web, and his book, Reinventionist Mindset. Joe, can I ask you, when it comes to reinventing and rapid reinvention, are there principles that we can, you know, so people can jot them down, principles that they can learn to pivot quickly, move quickly with this reinvention?
Yeah, thank you for asking that, Alan. There's five of them, and that's really the heart of the book. And it's based on, you know, real world examples of working with leadership teams, trying to get businesses back to growth and relevance. And, you know, it's worth noting that when I say reinvention, a lot of people say, oh, that must mean I throw out everything I've been doing and start again and do something different. And it's actually the opposite. It's how do you become the most powerful and relevant version of you, your business, your company, your brand, in the least amount of time? That's my definition of reinvention. And so the principles are really simple. They're two or three word ideas. They're based on having worked with over 40 leadership teams, getting businesses back to growth and relevance. And I'll go through them and just stop me anywhere you like. The first one I mentioned in the beginning segment, embrace uncertainty. You know, the way I think about it, look, there's a lot of reasons why, you know, we humans don't like to make change, and risk is one of them. But the way I think about it, change is hard, but irrelevance is one heck of a lot harder. So let's just get on with it. Let's accept that that things are changing quickly today, and in a pandemic world, even faster. And just say, look, I'm going to trust my instincts and those of my colleagues. I'm going to dive in and be courageous as I think about the next act of my business. And that's what entrepreneurs at every level of company have to figure out today. What is the next act that's going to be in sync with what's happening today and what people need and expect? And so that's kind of principle one.
Good.
Second is create the future now. And that sounds pretty simple. I took this out of the tech industry, that get it out of your head. If you've got a sort of an evolution, an iteration of the business, the service, the value proposition, your experience with customers, get it out of your head, get it out of the lab, and get it into the field fast. And this is a human nature barrier here, where we want to perfect things. We want to analyze things, make sure it's right. Just balance getting it right and getting it perfect with getting on with it, because that's what the world needs. And you'll learn as you go. So create the future now is principle two. The third one is about, you know, humans working together to get things done faster and more powerfully. It's make momentum together. And what that is just, let's be collaborative in the spirit of figuring out the next act of any business. And it sounds pretty obvious, but here's what's really magic, particularly if you've got a business that's, you know, a lot of people in it, lots of associates distributed across geography, et cetera. One of the critical things of doing things together, you know, setting strategy, looking for, you know, ideas, setting innovation in motion, is when you collaborate in any number of ways, you get buy-in. And making change requires everyone to buy in and align. You know, alignment equals power. You're a car guy, and power gives you, you know, momentum. And so, you know, that aspect of doing things together, collaborate to create energy and buy-in, it's fundamental to making change. Yeah. Fourth one, seek insight everywhere. You know, that's just simply open the aperture, open your eyes to what's going on in the world. Like, you know, Uber did more to change, not just, you know, the taxi cab industry, but it changed banking. Why? Because consumers were saying, if it's this easy to hail a cab, you know, and I get all this, you know, interface and control and transparency. Why can't banking be that easy? Why can't supermarket shopping be that easy? You know, look beyond your category, because sometimes we just get so steeped. You know, we go to our category conferences, you know, we read our trade papers, and we don't look beyond, but our consumers live in the big world, and they take, you know, best practices from category to category. So you want to know what's going on. You want to keep tuned in. And then, you know, this notion of obsessing the outcome, this principle, so important. Look, most people say, oh, I need a new strategy when I need to make change. Yes, you do need a strategy. But if you can't define where you want to get to, the outcome that you have in mind, in some way, no amount of strategy will take you there. And so, you know, think about what it is you want to achieve. You know, BHAG is a concept you may be familiar with, big, hairy, audacious goal. And set that your sights on that. Try to make it tangible where you want to go. Share it with others and get focused on it. Be relentless in your pursuit of it.
All right, hang tight.
Those are the five.
Hold tight. Got a commercial. We're going to come back with more Joe Jackman right here on Entrepreneur Weekly.
Very superstitious.
Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
I'm talking to the author of the book Reinventionist Mindset. His name is Joe Jackman. His company, Jackman. Online, www.jackmanreinvents.com on the web. So, you can check him out there. Check his book out. Okay, you said a couple of things there. I'm gonna just blow through them real quick. These are the five principles of reinvention, and every business needs to really embrace these. I wrote them down, but you can find them there in the book, Reinventionist Mindset. Embrace uncertainty. So it's one thing to accept it. It's another thing to embrace it. Okay, that's number one. Number two, get on with life. Create the future now. Get busy. Get your mojo going again. Number three, make momentum together. I wrote the word collaborate. I love to collaborate. I love putting my mojo with your mojo, and we co-modulate. That's a word a friend of mine made up. Number four, seek insight everywhere. I don't care if it comes from a little kid or if there's a bird chirping in a tree and it makes you think of, oh my gosh, I could make birdhouses. Oh, whatever, it doesn't matter where it comes from. Seek insight everywhere. I love this. And then number five, we didn't get a lot of time on, but I guess, is it stop obsessing the outcome? Is that kind of what it is? In other words,
no, it's actually obsess the outcome.
Okay, like, so that's
get it clear in your mind.
I wanted to know because I wasn't
just
sure.
Relentlessly pursue it.
Okay, so do obsess the outcome. Okay.
Yes.
See, I got that one wrong. That's why I got to ask these questions. But then in there, you said something. I thought you were talking about my ex-girlfriend, BHAG. And I was like, hey, what is BHAG?
What is that? So these two smart guys, James Collins and Jerry Porras, you know, in a book they wrote, they talked about setting goals and how the bigger the goal, and, you know, their expression was the more audacious, the big, hairy, audacious goal, it'll actually change the way you think about, you know, your strategy and how you're going to go about achieving what you set out to. And the bigger, higher order the goal is, it actually can cause you to think more broadly and innovatively about how you're going to achieve it. And I've put it to practice in my work. And, you know, you want things that take your breath away. You say, yikes, how am I going to achieve that?
Right.
Well, it'll get you thinking differently.
Gotcha.
And that's important. And set your sights on what you want to achieve, and then just, you know, don't let anything stop you from achieving it.
So it's like standing at the base of
Mount. And if you fall short of the BHAG, you'll get further than you might otherwise.
BHAG. It's like standing at the base of Mount Kilimanjaro, going, "Oh my God!" But I'm going to do it.
That's right. Yep.
Okay.
You got to get pumped up for that climb.
Yeah,
right?
Baby.
And that's what happened. It energizes people. It gets them to say, oh, yes, we can.
There you go. All right. So I don't want to insult anybody. My ex-girlfriend was over 40 years ago. I've been married 39 years, and she was not a hag. She was actually a very attractive girl, and I still love her to this day, just in case. Because you never know who's listening. She's a good person.
Disclaimer.
Okay. So now a lot of people are standing in the face of bankruptcy. How can you, and I know you've only got 2.5 minutes to talk about regaining relevance in the face of bankruptcy. Think of how many people right now are standing in those shoes.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, the first thing I would say to those that have experienced it or are is you're not alone. You know, some of the biggest, most successful companies in America have experienced that exact same thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, JCPenney and Neiman Marcus and so on. So it happens. And this is a global pandemic. The second thing is, and this is something my dad taught to me, it's not what happens to you. You know this. It's what you do about it that counts.
Right.
And so here's what I think is the silver lining of bankruptcy. As difficult as it is, and sometimes it can be very personally difficult just from a reputational point of view, shake all that off and say the benefit of bankruptcy is it allows you to get your house in order.
Yeah.
A lot of times you look at the big companies, you read about them daily, they're shedding debt, they're restructuring things, they're getting rid of, you know, if you're a retailer, getting real estate they should have gotten rid of a long time ago. You know, they're leaning down so that they can reemerge in a stronger, albeit smaller position. But use that and say, okay, what is it that got us to success in the first place? What's the DNA, the core idea? Now, we have this moment in time where we can say, how would we keep that idea and hold it up as important, but how would we make it even more powerful and relevant for today, in today's context? And that's what I like, you know, about that moment after bankruptcy is you can just say, okay, let's take a fresh look at the world. Who are we? What do we believe in? Which customers are we focused on? What do they care about? And now we get a do-over.
Yeah.
And you just need to let all the past, you know, the way I think about the past is a foreign country. You know, they do things differently there. Let's not care about that. Let's just focus on what we can control. And, you know, I don't believe there is a business that cannot be reborn.
Yep.
Very few people would sort of say the same, but look, I've helped to reinvent dozens and dozens of companies, some of which were actually lost causes. There is no lost cause.
I love it.
You know, you can figure this out.
No, I've been there myself. The best thing that ever happened to me was my business failed and I had to look at who I was, why I did what I did, my big fat ego, my pride, my will, my lust, my anger, my love of Hershey's Kisses, everything. I had to throw it in the pot. Joe Jackman, you're the best.
Deeper.
I know, right? This man is...
No, you're right. It's a reboot.
That's right.
And, you know, you do it with your laptop. When it goes, you know, sideways...
You reboot it.
You get a chance in business to do that. You reboot.
All right. This guy, you can look him up. He is at jackmanreinvents.com on the web. Check out his book, Reinventionist Mindset. I'm Alan Taylor. Thank you, Joe. You're a good man.
Alan, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
There's more to come right after this. It is Entrepreneur Weekly.
Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, you know, a lot of people are having to work from home because, not because they want to, but because they're being forced to by this crazy pandemic thing that's going on. And so our next guest up, his name is Clint Padgett. He is the president and CEO of a company called Project Success Incorporated. ProjectSuccess.com on the web. Clint, welcome to the show. You are also author of two books, one, Project Success Method, and the other one, How Teams Triumph, Managing by Commitment. First of all, let me say thank you for your service. I know you were in the Navy for a number of years. You, my friend, have worked yourself up from the shipyard after the Navy to president and CEO and owner of this company that you went to work for a number of years ago. I love your story. I love your commitment. And maybe that's how teams triumph, is through the commitment like you had, because you're living the American dream. Your story is interesting. I'd actually like you to tell us your story a little bit in the beginning here, because you are what you have written about, really. Your life is a good experience. So talk about your experience as a businessman and working your way up, you know, from the Navy. Start there.
I spent 6 years in the Navy as an electrician on an aircraft carrier out of Norfolk, USS America. And when you're in the Navy, of course, you work 12 to 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. So after 6 years of that, I'd had enough, and I thought there must be something better to do with my life than this. So when I got out, I went to work at a shipyard and discovered there's probably no greater motivation to go to college in the world than work in a shipyard in Norfolk, Virginia in December and January, which is exactly what I was doing. Right. So after 2 months of that, I thought, yeah, I think college might be the path for me. So I was lucky enough to get in to Georgia Tech, where I earned an electrical engineering degree. I then went to work for Coca-Cola right across the street from Georgia Tech. And while I was in 94, I left Coke and went to work for Project Success, the same company I'm with today. Along the way, I also earned an MBA from Duke University. Wow. And one of the things that I was talking to you about before the show started, when I first came on board with the company, I was 31 years old and basically considered a punk kid because everybody else was at least 10 years older than me. So they made me a senior associate. They didn't even want to call me a consultant. So over the 11-year period from 94 to 2005, I was able to work my way up the chain of command, eventually becoming the vice president of operations. And then in 05, when the owner wanted to sell, I was able to pull off and buy the company from him. So people often say, well, how do you get to be president? My answer is, it's easy. You buy the company, make yourself the president.
I love it. But you know what? You got to tell the story because he told it to me. I want him to tell it for you guys that are listening, how hard it was to buy that company and how much you had to go through. Tell about the banks.
Sure. So the story goes that I ended up having to talk to 13 different banks before I got the deal done, because obviously we're a consulting firm, we're not a real estate company, and they wanted you to have, you know, assets that were not just people. So I talked to bank number 12, and that one seemed to be going really well. We're probably 8, 9, 10 weeks into the deal, getting ready to close with the Small Business Association. And I get a call from the bank saying, hey, I got some bad news. I just talked to the SBA, and they're not going to be able to loan you the money. And I said, well, I don't understand. What changed? And they said, well, what changed was we ran the numbers, and to qualify for a small business loan, the max, your average can be $5 million or less. Your average over the last 3 years was $5.1 million, so you're too big. And I thought, this is just crazy. I've been doing this now for about, you know, 5, 6 months trying to pull this deal together. You're my 12th bank. I'm just going to give up. I'm just done. This wasn't meant to be. So later that day, I leave the office, and I go out and get in my car, and I listen to all kinds of music. And this particular day, I was listening to country music. And Tim McGraw had a new song on the radio that was playing when I got in my car I never heard before. And the song was called, How Bad Do You Want It? And I thought, you know, that's got to be a sign. So let me not give up. I called bank number 13, who also did not give me the loan, but they gave me information that I could go back to bank number 12 with. I was able to secure the loan with bank number 12 based on the information I got from bank 13, who said no. So,
isn't that great? But they gave you the loan because,
yep,
you know, it's just like the fact that you didn't give up is you were 3 feet from gold, and you went that extra 3 feet. You bought the company. You're now the president and CEO. You were the lowest guy on the totem pole. You worked your way up, and here you are still working with big, huge companies and doing great. And first of all, congratulations. People need to hear these stories. This is the American dream you're living, you know, and it wasn't easy. Listen, it wasn't easy, was it? Right?
It was not easy. It was hard to keep a positive attitude, but I may not be the smartest guy in the room, but I'm going to be the hardest working. That's
you know
how
what?
I looked at it.
That's always been me, too, just so you know. And I know one thing. I am not the smartest guy in the room. But I do also know another thing, that I've watched people die trying to keep up with me, and I feel bad about that. But he should have learned his lesson. Anyway, all right, so let's talk about this crazy world we're in right now and working from home. What advice do you have for people? We'll take a break after that, and then we'll continue talking about it because it's a big deal. People get something I've heard of that's called Zoom fatigue. I mean, I've heard of people doing some strange things on Zoom, as we've watched in the news, but Zoom fatigue.
Yeah.
And I think I may have it. I'm getting sick of it. But, you know, just to start, just go for it. Start. What are you talking about when people say to you, you know, what about working from home?
Well, I think the key is to recognize that communication and conversation are two very different things. Communication, I thought what you and I were doing for years of my life, I thought what you and I were doing right now was communicating, but that's technically not true. The definition of communication, according to Webster at least, is the act or process of using words to express or exchange information. So I can express my words through a text message, through an email, through a voicemail, right? That's, or posting something on Slack or Jira or some other collaboration tool, and I am technically communicating. But what I'm not doing is having a conversation. The difference with a conversation, its definition of, is an oral exchange of sentiments, observations, opinions, or ideas, and that's really the key word. It's an exchange of information. And I think the best way I could put it is we probably all played that game when we were kids called telephone. And, you know, that you got 3, 4, 5 kids lined up in a row, and you whisper a secret in the first person's ear,
right,
and they turn and whisper it on down the line. And, of course, what happens is what comes out of person number five's mouth is not remotely close to what person number one said. And that's kind of the fun of the game, right? Well, the reason the message gets mangled is because each person is communicating one direction. And then when I hear the message, it comes to me through my filter of my bias, my life experiences, the way that I define certain terms, whether I'm having a bad day that day or not, and then I put my twist on it and communicate it on down the line. Where if you want your message to be clear all the way through, then you need to have a conversation where each person turns back to the previous person and says, wait a minute, what do you mean by that word? I'm not familiar with that word. Or right, when you say go left, do you mean go left like right now or at the McDonald's 2 blocks up? Right, so you're able to ask these clarifying questions, and then your message gets communicated clearly. And when you're working remotely, it's even more difficult. You have to be more proactive to make sure you're having these conversations, because we want so badly just to get it off our to-do list and off our plate. And so the easiest way I can do that is I'm just going to shoot you a text message. In my mind, it's off my plate now. I hope you never call me about it because I'm done. Whereas if I actually pick up the phone and call you, I might find out I'm not done.
All right, hold on.
More things on my
hold computer. On. I know you're not done, but I got to communicate to you that I got to take a commercial break, so don't go anywhere.
Yes, sir. Sorry.
It's all right. No. Man, you got a mouthful right there. You got some great information. You're communicating, and we're conversating, and we're commodulating. All right, don't go anywhere. Clint Padgett is his name. ProjectSuccess.com on the web. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. I am an entrepreneur. Clint Padgett is an entrepreneur. His company, Project Success Incorporated, projectsuccess.com on the web. We're talking about remote working from home. And really, the importance of proper communication. I used a word there, and people probably heard it and went, what? It's a word that I've been using, Clint, for a long time. It's it actually comes twice, because one is commodulation. That's putting our mojos together. And it's really a form of communicating, right? It's like, let me tell you my ideas, you tell me your ideas, and then we're going to go out together and conquer the world. And the other one is a cross-modulation. In other words, we're cross-pollinating with what we both do well. And then we both, you know, what is it? Oh, you worked in the Navy. All boats rise with a rising tide. So you were talking about, is communication the same thing as conversation, and why you feel conversation is more powerful? My apologies, I had to pay the bills there with a commercial, but you know what I'm saying. We're all businessmen here. But gosh, this is so good, because, you know, people get apathetic. You know, they're working. Maybe they're watching what's going on in the world today with the political scene, with the COVID situation. Their hearts aren't in it. And so they do not good communications, whether it be an email or a text message, or, you know, even when they're on Zoom and they're preoccupied, the kids are in the background and they're worried they're going to run into the picture and they're not paying attention. They're not communicating well. So what you're saying here is communication and conversation are like one of the pillars of this whole work from home thing. Really important. Am I getting that right?
You are. I definitely would say I want to weigh heavily on the conversation side, because right, you can communicate
all day long,
one-way communications, right, but your message may not be received clearly. You know, this is actually was a problem even before the pandemic. We were actually in the office together. People would often drop back and just send emails and text messages because it was easy, right? And what they didn't want to do was walk down the hallway, stick their head in the door and go, hey, Alan, can we talk about this? Because it takes longer. I mean, how many times has somebody called you on your phone and you answered and they went, oh, I just want to leave a voicemail, because they didn't really want to talk to you, right? They just wanted to get it off their plate, right?
Right.
To check it off my to-do list.
Hot potato. Right.
And so it's just exacerbated now that we're working remotely. It's even more important that we force ourselves to have conversations. And I think there's a continuum. I think you can communicate through email and text messages, and they're perfectly fine. And then the next step up, but the problem with those two ways of communicating is you don't really know the tone. I mean, how many times have you sent an email and somebody misinterpreted the tone in which it was written.
Oh, yeah.
And they get angry, and you're like, I did not, no, that's not what I meant at all, right?
Right.
And so
right.
People misinterpret the tone. Then you have a phone call. Now they, at least you can hear the tone of the voice, whether they're getting frustrated or exasperated. It's still not as good as being able to see the visual cues, which you can get on Zoom. But as you alluded to, with Zoom, I've only got one little block. I can only see your face. I'm not able to see that you folded your arms, meaning you disagree with me, or that you're tapping your legs or your fingers because you're bored, or you're looking down, I think, taking notes, but you're actually playing a game on your phone, right?
Right.
So clearly the best way to have true communication and conversation is face-to-face.
Right.
But since we're not in a place where we can do that right now, at least not very well, because even with the mask, you lose so much of the nonverbal cues, right?
Yep.
So you have to force yourself to have these conversations.
So what about Zoom fatigue we're hearing about more and more?
It's definitely a thing. I actually talked to Dr. Libby Sander over at Bond University in Australia, who had written an article about Zoom fatigue. And what happens is, because you see your picture on the screen, you see your face on the screen for Zoom, you tend to focus more on it. And you don't realize, I always joke that if I'm standing in front of a room of people, I just assume I look good. But when I see myself on Zoom, I'm like, man, my hair's a mess. I didn't realize that was sticking out. My button is off. And your level of anxiety begins to rise because you see yourself so much. And the other thing is because of the technologies. You can have just a 1.2-second delay, and you think, am I frozen? Did they hear me? Am I on mute?
Right.
And all those things add to the anxiety of the Zoom calls. So Zoom fatigue is actually a thing.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting because I find that the little conversations that happen between meetings or when you're taking a break, they're sometimes even more important because you have a moment of clarity and transparency. And do you have any thoughts on that, what they used to call the water cooler talk, you know?
Oh, 100% agree. I mean, there are so many powerful things that happen on the way to get a cup of coffee. You run into a teammate or a fellow coworker, and just this organic conversation happens that ends up having some huge benefit on a different project. Or maybe it's just that you don't know this person very well, and through that conversation you have on the way to lunch or to get coffee, you get to know them better, and you start to establish relationships
right.
that you're going to leverage when you do your work. So these are very powerful conversations that aren't happening today.
All right. When we come back, you're going to have about 5 minutes before we end the show to give some real hardcore advice to those that are working at home right now or are about to have to start working at home. And but this guy you need to listen to, everybody, Clint Padgett, projectsuccess.com is his website. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly. Up and down this road. Are you paying too much for business insurance? Do you have critical gaps in your coverage? Entrepreneur Insurance can help you find out. In 6 out of 10 policies, business owners are paying too much for property, general liability, or workers' comp insurance. Entrepreneur Insurance can help you identify ways to save and any gaps in coverage. Head to entrepreneur.com/insurance to complete the questionnaire and get a personalized quote. It's an easy way to find out if you're paying too much. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/insurance.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Talking to Clint Padgett. He's written two books, the first being Project Success Method, and the second one being How Teams Triumph, Managing by Commitment. And life is ultimately all your choices in life, all kind of rolled up into one big ball, and that's what you call your life. And your commitment to certain systems and processes will make a big difference. Clint Padgett, now it's time for you, hopefully, to give us, 3, 4, 5, whatever, just really good points of how people working at home can achieve a more successful business life and life too, because these things all work throughout our lives as well. Go for it. Where do we start?
Well, I think the first thing is we've already touched on, but force yourself to have physical, actual conversations with somebody. Don't just shoot an email when you probably need to have a conversation to make sure your message is being received clearly, particularly when you're working remotely. It's the last thing you want is to be doing the wrong thing. So you want to make sure you're doing the right task at the right time and the right project. So make sure you're having those conversations.
Yep.
That can come through phone calls. That can come through Zoom. for you, if you're a new hire and you haven't been able to experience that bonding that you get when you're in a physical environment together, then what I would recommend you do is just set up some time with your team, your new teammates, and say, hey, can I call you for 5 minutes just to introduce myself? Or just, even if it's an existing coworker you've known for a while, maybe you need to have a quick phone call just to say, hey, let's talk about how you're doing. How are your parents? How are your kids? What's going on with you? To make sure that you're not isolating yourself. So be clear in your messaging. Make sure you have the conversations to go with that. Talk to your team members. If you're new, make sure you're getting in front of the people on Zoom or through phone calls just so they get to know who you are. In an existing relationship, make sure that you're continuing to nurture that relationship and not feeling so isolated by being just by yourself all the time.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I would say is make sure you're careful of intentions. I'll make this as short as I can, but basically back in 1997, U.S. News and World Report did a survey of several thousand people, and they said, what chance should you give the following person to get into heaven? And they went down this list, and I'll just cherry pick a few. That Bill Clinton, 52% chance of getting into heaven. Hillary Clinton, 55% chance. I guess you got 3% more for putting up with Bill. Princess Di, 60%, actually the third highest on the list. Michael Jordan, 65%. Oprah Winfrey, 66%. So I always like to joke, apparently you can buy your way into heaven. Mother Teresa. So when I heard this survey, I said, Mother Teresa, nobody gets 100, but she's got to be upper 90s. No, 79% chance of getting into heaven was what she was given by these people being surveyed. Only one person scored higher than Mother Teresa at 87%, and that person was the person being surveyed. They gave themselves an 8% better chance of getting into heaven than Mother Teresa. So when I first heard this story, the guy that said it told me like this. He goes, so if I get this right, Mother Teresa and I arrive at the pearly gates together. St. Peter says, I've only got space for one. I look at Mother Teresa and say, excuse me, ma'am, that spot's reserved for me. And I step through, right? So if you look at this, why is that? And here's why I think it is. I give myself credit for my intentions. I intended to get this task done by Friday. It's not my fault my boss gave me 60 hours worth of work to do this week. I did 60 hours. I put in more than my time, so I it's not my fault. I give myself credit as if I'd done that task. Everybody else, I look at what the results are. And so just be careful about your intentions, because they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. The same thing happens here. People are judging you off your results, not off of your intention.
Isn't that interesting? You're absolutely right. I don't care what a guy says. Well, I do. I mean, I have to be careful about saying that. But, you know, I care about what he does, if I can say it like that. A lot of people are braggadocious. They talk a good line of garbage. But if you look at their results, you're like, well, he's just a BS talker. You know what I'm saying? And I just would rather have a guy that doesn't say all that much but gets the job done. That, to me, is far more valuable, because getting the job done, isn't that what we're trying to do? Get the job done and do it well. So you're right, though.
Right.
Force yourself to have physical conversations. So important. I know that through my life, and I'm 60 years old, I've had multiple businesses, and I would say I've been pretty successful, and I've failed once miserably early on, and that taught me a lot. But I will say that all of my best business dealings have been made through personal conversations, face-to-face, learning a man or a woman's heart and what is important to them in their lives, and then making sure that I always come back to that when I say, you know, how you doing? How's it going? And how's whatever it is that you are interested in? In other words, because if it doesn't matter, if I don't care about them, I'll have forgotten. But if I truly care about people I do business with, I remember. And I do remember. I'm very thankful for that. I'm thankful for you today, Clint Paget. Thank you, sir. Good advice.
Thank you. My pleasure.
If you want success, then maybe Project Success is for you. ProjectSuccess.com. You can reach the president and CEO, Clint Paget. Also, check out his books. They're available, I'm sure, online. Project Success Method and How Teams Triumph, Managing by Commitment. That's it for me this week. I'm Alan Taylor. We'll see you next week right here on Entrepreneur Weekly.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.